Okay, so we'll get to that in a moment. If you got your sheets up here, one of them is one you should be familiar with. It's this little cheat sheet. This is Cliff Notes version of this, basically. So you can work from that sheet right there, and kind of get a little bit down the road on what we call, or what I call, tracing the argument. So that's something we're going to do tonight here as we study the text. One, I want to show you how it helps with your study. And two, we don't have time to explain the text and then come back to it and do, you know, the lesson on it. So you're kind of going to get a behind-the-scenes look tonight as we walk through it. So let me do this first. We're going to read our text all the way through. And I will begin to walk through discussing in a little bit more detail what tracing is. We'll work through an example here, and then I'll turn to this page, if you have that one as well over there, and kind of show you what I did, okay? Don't let that overwhelm you. It is a thing that you take in really small bits and pieces, and when you get together, it's like putting together a puzzle. You know, nobody's going to sit down and grab 500 pieces at once. You know, you grab one piece at a time. And that's kind of how we do that. So let's read through our whole text. Tonight we're Galatians 5, 12 through, I don't know if that says, in my notes it has the wrong number, but it's 12 through basically the end of the chapter, verse 26. So let's read that together. I wish those who unsettle you would emasculate themselves. For you were called to freedom, brothers, only do not use your freedom as an opportunity for the flesh, but through love serve one another. For the whole law is fulfilled in one word: you shall love your neighbor as yourself. But if you bite and devour one another, watch out that you are not consumed by one another. But I say, walk by the Spirit, you will not gratify the desires of the flesh. For the desires of the flesh are against the Spirit, and the desires of the Spirit are against the flesh. For these are opposed to each other to keep you from doing things you want to do. But if you are led by the Spirit, you are not under the law. Now, the works of the flesh are evident: sexual immorality, impurity, sensuality, idolatry, sorcery, enmity, strife, jealousy, fits of anger, rivalries, dissensions, divisions, envy, drunkenness, orgies, and things like these. I warn you, as I warned you before, that those who do such things will not inherit the kingdom of God. But the fruit of the Spirit love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such things there is no law. And those who belong to Christ Jesus have crucified the flesh with its passions and desires. If we live by the Spirit, let us also walk by the Spirit. Let us not become conceited, provoking one another, envying one another. Okay. So, we will return to that in a moment with a little bit of a plan. What is tracing? I've talked about it a few times. I told you tonight we're gonna talk about it in some detail. Just enough detail so that I hope that you can feel competent to try it yourself. We're not going to get deep into the weeds of things on purpose. And let me say, everything that I'm about to say to you is colored by purpose. personal opinion and my own preferences. So this technique is not inspired. You know, I'm not doing it, quote, the right way. It's the way I do it. There's flexibility here. Think of this just as a tool for you to better understand the word. And so if you find yourself in a situation where following this technique seems to kind of muddy the waters for you in the text, or maybe it could give it a meaning that you don't think is there, then, you know, we just don't do it. Or we just ignore it. So it's a tool for us. It's not a Bible code, okay? We're not going to, like, find the secret meaning. It's not, like I said, it's not infallible. So if it comes up and there's this, wait, you know, they were right. Jesus didn't really die on the cross or something like that. Like, listen, if you come up with something like that through here, you know, just stick with the basics, right? Stick with what you know to be true. This is going to be helping us to understand the structure of Paul's argument, the flow of Paul's thought. And as I said before, it's mostly useful for Paul because he is a very logical thinker and writer. So when he writes even a letter like Galatians, there's a little bit of him jumping in and out. We can see that in the text. We've seen some of that. And there's a time or two when he's like, hey, you know, verse 11 in the next chapter, see with what large letters I'm writing to you with my own hand. And there's a, so he doesn't always just follow the script. But what's interesting is things like that stand out because it's not part of the script. Because he usually does follow the script. Or at least has a very logical pathway. So this is just simply a tool for us to kind of help us see the way Paul is structuring his letters and arguments. I say arguments, you know what I mean, like a lawyer, not like, you know, two kids arguing over who gets the last piece of pizza or something. Although I guess maybe they could be having some pretty good discussions as well, but you know what I mean here. So, if you look at your sheet, these are the kinds of relationships we're looking for. And I don't really pay much attention to the big headings, coordinate relationships, support by distinct statement, all that stuff. If that's helpful to you, take it in, digest that, use it. I tend to not look at the big sections, and I just tend to say, okay, what kind of relationship is this? Is this a series where each proposition is independent and they're just connected together? Is this a ground down in the red section? Or a statement, and the argument or reason for that statement is supporting the proposition that follows. You know, some of these are self-evident. If then is a really great example of it. You know, if you see an if, especially if you see a then, you got an if then, right? Pretty simple. But a lot of these are tied to words, keywords. So that's what the back of this is for. It's not exhausted. There might be some other keywords that will help you. So think about a word that it tells two statements how they relate to one another. We don't run into a lot of these in our study through here, but so, for example, the word when, okay? Not like W-I-N, but when are we going to town or something. So that word clues us in. It's real simple. I mean, you could probably guess it without me even saying it. It clues us in that these two things are related by time. There's a time element here, right? And we actually do see that. I just thought about it. We do see that in our text. So not maybe our example, but... anyway, the point is, it tells you specifically, and again with Paul, that he's not throwing away words. So if he says when, then we know that there is a strict time element here. Or if it says after, before, something like this. So that's a good example of how, an obvious example too, of how we see those relationships working. And for us, you know, if you're reading a lot, you just read right over those things and your brain processes it. You already kind of know what when means, right? But if you're stopping and digging in deep, taking all of these words what we're talking about. And again, using this tool, we're using the words that help us see the connection between propositions. Sometimes there's not a real clear connection. You can kind of try to make a connection if you think these two big chunks go together in a certain way, but you know, you don't have to. It's all about how it helps you understand the text. And I'll tell you, there's a little bit of it too, which I mentioned earlier, the example of a puzzle. There is a little bit of fun to it. So, you know, don't get carried away and make your tracing more important than understanding the text. Because, you know, for me, I can get kind of nerded out on, oh, I bet this is that kind of connection or something. And or disappointed when I've got two or three the same kind in a row or something. You know, like I'm not looking hard enough or being creative enough. No, it's all about taking what the text says and helping us understand it. So that's what tracing is. Now, we're going to do an example here, and I might have to yell because I won't be at the microphone. But first thing we're going to do, whenever you start to trace anything, any of Paul's work, and you pick out a section you want to do, you can do the whole book, by the way. That's not a bad thing to do. It's a lot. It's overwhelming. We're not going to do that. And if you do a smaller section and then another, you might find that ultimately you can connect these sections together with big ideas. And the proposition of a whole section might be able to be connected to another whole section, which you will see in our example, we do a little bit of that. All right, so let's just do it here. Let's just do this. I'm going to let y'all help me find the key words in this passage. Now, don't look at this thing. It's already kind of broken down for you. Put that aside for now, and just look at what we have up here. And y'all just go ahead and say them. If you know one, one another, not for what we're doing. One another is not a word that connects two ideas or propositions. So if you want hints, look on the back of your paper here. It's usually a conjunction, Suzanne, if you're thinking about.
But.
There we go. We got this one here. Okay. We've also got right here. All right, y'all spot any other conjunctions?
By.
Where's that?
By.
By? No, that's not one of our keywords, but it actually it is, isn't it? I was just going to say, but it is kind of connecting things.
Yeah.
Okay. Good catch there. Is there another one? Yep. So, this may not be grammatically correct to call all these words conjunctions, just so you know. There is a little bit of grammar in here, but there's also a little bit of flexibility. But if the word connects two ideas or two propositions, so any others? There's some obvious ones up here. Y'all can say those. And, right? And,
yeah.
Okay, there we go. I'm gonna go ahead and circle if, but if as a partner, right? If that word is standing on its own, then it's not a conjunction, right? But if it's a part of a condition, you know, then it's a conjunction. Or it's what we're calling conjunctions. Conjunctions and conjunctive adjectives, adverbs, I mean. We don't have then up here. But we can supply it. Where would it fall? If you, by by and devour one another, watch out that you're not consumed by one another. Where would it fall, y'all think?
On Daylight Prices, right? Where do you think it falls?
Watch out.
Yeah. It falls right here, I think. So, because that's the condition. If this, then you should do that, right?
So, any others that we see up there? I don't see any others. So, give me a second, and I'm going to rewrite this with those conjunctions. All right, got my little thing here. Now, in this case, and devour one another, I'm not going to put that on another line. That's my personal preference here, because I think they're saying the same thing. Well, actually, I will. I'll go ahead and put it on another line.
Just for our sake tonight, I wouldn't normally do this. Okay, we're going to supply then. Watch out. Notice I'm putting all of our conjunctions here on the edge. That's the way we're going to connect all these with our physical marks here. So that's why I'm rewriting it to put all of our conjunctions at the beginning of the statement here. Sorry for my handwriting, guys. I apologize for that. Is that right? Did I miss something? But I say, well, by the Spirit.
There's a knot in there that changes the whole surface, too.
It does.
Okay, and Brother Dick makes a good point. There's a lot of, that feels like I didn't write everything. Y'all check me. Did I write all the words? Consumed on them? I feel like I missed them. So one of the things you do, you have to remember if you're doing this technique, is to focus in on what you're doing, because we are not looking at some things that are important. Like Suzanne mentioned one another's, Brother Dick mentioned the word not, the negatives there, which those are key words in understanding the passage. And if we were doing inductive Bible study method, we would key in on a lot of different things. This is all about the structure, not necessarily the meaning, if that makes sense. So that's why we're focusing on the words we are. Because there are obviously a lot of things in here that are really, really important that we're not highlighting. So if we're doing a big study, we would do like maybe even this first and then come back and you would look at other words for other reasons. So it's a real specific thing that we're doing here. All right, so we got our keywords. So now we're going to try to say, okay, in this short section here, which is two verses in our Bible, how do these statements connect to one another? Is there a bigger structure to this? For our sake, this is pretty small, so we're not going to get a ton of insight out of this, but it's a help to see what we're doing. So, one of the things I'd have written on the top of your paper here is just a little note. Where do you start? You might think, start at the top. And that's fine. But I have found that I jump around within the section I'm working on because some big sections need to go together, but really the smallest things need to go together first. So what I would say, the most obvious things, the things that you look at and you're like, well, duh, that goes together like this. The obvious things we connect first, and then the less clear things, we chew on that as we're working it out. We start from the simple things and move to the complex. So that is like connecting one proposition to another versus connecting like these three to the top three or something like that. We'll do the small ones first or the simple ones, and we'll do the obvious ones first. So for me, there's a couple obvious ones here. I think these are the most obvious. Those are really tight to me. It's really clear how this is connected to that and how these are connected to one another. So I'm going to start with those. And if you look on your sheet, you look for that word by, and you see that little code there, ACMN in blue, and you flip over, look for the blue section, and that's the first one, action, manner. Not rocket science, right? But flip it over. Yeah. Take the back of your sheet that looks like this, and you find that the key word. And it's right here, just about middle ways down. And you look by that, and it says it's an action manner. And then you look over here, and you can find a little more detail about that. So that says it's an action and a statement or a statement indicating the way or manner that an action is carried out. So that makes sense, right? So Paul says, let's just use this one. But I say walk, okay? That's the action, walk. What's the manner? How do you carry that out? By the Spirit. So again, not rocket science. But if you're breezing through this real quickly, you probably don't even stop and chew on that. But doing this, you will. All these little details we'll stop and think about. So, I make a bracket like this and make those little symbols in there, which shows this is the action, this is the manner. And all of these won't necessarily connect tightly. This one does. So, here's another one right here. The action is being consumed, right? You're going to be consumed. That's the action. How is that going to happen? One another. You're going to get consumed, and the people around you are going to do it, right? Your church family, in this case, is what Paul is saying. There's going to be some people consumed by this. And the way that's going to happen is the other people in the church are going to do it. That's the manner. So that's action, manner. Those are real tight. Any others y'all see? I mean, they're all kind of, I picked this because there's not a lot of tricks in there. Pretty straightforward. I say tricks. It works well for our illustration. How about, you might be looking at this one saying, well, where in the world does that go? This would go bigger, not on our page. So we're not going to worry about that right now. We'll get to that when we look at the big passage. Okay, so the ands are both here. So is the if-then. That's here. But because this one is kind of on the outside of that, I'm going to go ahead and connect this one here. If you see what I mean, this connection will be on the inside of this one. So I'm going to make this connection here. Once we kind of do this, it might be foggy right now, but hopefully it'll help you in a moment when we see it. So what is the word and? It can be several things. It's near the top on the back, this side. So it could be a series, which is just like, I like baseball and I like football. It's just two things listed after one another with no real significant connection. It's just they're connected. It could be a progression, which is a really important technique that scriptural writers use. They use it very often, especially Old Testament. We see that real clearly in like the Psalms, when you start off with a kind of a smaller, maybe a praise of the Lord, and then it kind of crescendos into something big. So there's a progression from smaller to greater. It could be that. But it can also be a situation and response, which that's what I think it is, and I'll tell you why. So that is the very last one on the page here, situation response. So that means I have a situation up front. But if you, wait, no, I'm looking at, I'm thinking about something else. Is that right? Yeah, I think that is. I think that is what I was saying. Yeah. Actually, that's not what I was looking at. I have my brain on another one. I'm sorry. I think that's just a series. I think it's a series biting and devouring. I think it could even be seen as a progression. So I'm going to put a P there because I do think biting comes before devouring, right? So this is biting and devouring. You're kind of getting worse there. But those are connected real simply. And then we'll connect this one right here. So you can see, well, let me do this one. No, okay. We're at a good place to kind of pause. Everything has been connected that we can. Now we're going to be connecting multiple propositions to something, right? So with this, we would connect two propositions to two or something like that. So we've moved from obvious connections, and we move from simple connections to more complex things. So that's where we are now. Now, if you just kind of take a look at my sheet here that I've given you, you don't have to look at all the information on there. Just look at how many times I erased. Y'all see that? Your sheet doesn't show them all because the copier doesn't get that kind of faded writing. Mine is covered in erase marks. And that's because once I do one and then I get to another section, I realize, oh, actually there's a better way to connect these. So if I gave this to everybody and you knew what you were doing in here tonight, we would very likely possibly all have completely different outlines. Very likely we would have multiple, almost 100% guarantee we would have multiple outlines. So what I'm going to do right now is just what I would do if I were studying. I'm going to start connecting them, and then I'm going to say, what do you think about that? Is that the best way to do it, or should we change it? So let's dive in. All right, if here, then. This is obvious. This is if then. This is a condition. If then is one of the few unmistakable ones. It's an action, a conditional. So the existence of the action is only potential, and the result is contingent upon the action. Okay, so if you bite and devour one another, okay, watch out, because you might consume one of them. You're gonna, if you do this, this will be the outcome. All right?
So this is a condition. If you do that, if you don't do that, this will happen. If you do, it won't. It will. If you don't, it won't. So if we bite and devour,
what is but an if, then?
That's pretty simple, right? Then watch out that you're not consumed by one another. So if you do that, you better watch out. Keep an eye on things. The next big connection would be probably down here. I say walk by the Spirit, do the walking by the Spirit, and you will not desire, you will not gratify the desires of the flesh. All right? This is the one I was thinking about earlier because I'd already thought this through, which I believe is a situation response.
This is your situation, and that's your response. The situation is
walk by the Spirit.
The response is, if you walk by the Spirit, you will not gratify the desires of the flesh. Okay?
That's a little sneaky one. Most ands are going to be just a series or a progression. So that's good that we kind of see that. I think that's the case. And now these two are connected.
The two big passages, and it's really, is this a break between the...
Yeah. So this is a break between the verses. It doesn't always happen like that. A lot of times the verses will kind of just seems almost like they're placed randomly. Other times it's placed exactly where you think it'd be. This is one of those times. This is the verse break. Listen, it doesn't always happen that way, so don't be a slave to the chapters and verses. You probably know this too, but those are not inspired either. They were added hundreds of years after the text was written, just to help us basically find our place. So these are connected. And this is the big connection. These two verses are connected. One big proposition and another big proposition. The first one is a big if-then structure. If you do this, then this will happen. The second one is a situation response, which is really similar. Walking by the Spirit causes that response, not gratifying the flesh. Again, doesn't always happen like that, but they're very similar. But we have this word right here. Since that word is the top, it's the one that connects to the next statement, if that makes sense. So, how are those two big statements related? These two big pieces. How are those two big things related? We have but. Let's look on the back of our sheet here and we'll see. That can be an alternative, which means each proposition expresses a different possibility arising from a situation. Maybe. That can be positive, negative, which seems pretty obvious there, but two statements, one of which is denied, so the other one is enforced. There's also a relationship implicit in contrasting statements. Do not be foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is. That's an example there. Or it can be the last one there, which is what he calls concessive. That's a main clause that stands despite contrary statement. And usually that's nevertheless, right? I intend always to remind you of these things, though you know them, even though, or something like that. So, what do y'all think it is? Do you think it's negative, positive? Do you think it's an alternative? How do you think they're connected there? What would you say is the force of that but? Negative, positive?
What about comparison?
Comparison? Well, we're missing the key word for comparison there. Let's see.
compared in a certain way, that's true. That would be words like, or even so, or something like that. According to our rules here, it's going to be one of those three.
Alternative.
It's going to be alternative, positive, negative, or concessive. I think it's one of those two. I think it's one of, it's either alternative or positive, negative. And again, these things are really similar. So you might have one, I might have another, and we have this exact same understanding of the passage. I think they're basically, in this case, indistinguishable to me. There are cases when it's clearly positive, negative, and there are cases when it's clearly this or that. But you can see that, yeah. You can do this, bite and devour one another, or you can do the alternative. Walk by the Spirit, right? So it could be alternative. Or you could say, this is definitely negative. We don't want to do this. This is the bad, this is the good. So you could do either one here. So I'll go ahead and put negative, positive. We could say both. Don't normally do that, but we could say both here because they both apply. Okay. So this is our example. Now I want you to take this sheet right here, and I'm going to show you a little bit of how I walk through this quickly. I won't go over time tonight, but I'm going to show you how I use this to help me kind of hone in on the big picture of the passage. I'm not going to stop and explain everything in detail on here because we don't have time. And if you want to know, I hope you can read my handwriting and use this to decipher the symbols. Like ALT means alternative. G means ground. There's situation response, action purpose. That one that looks like a TO, you might think that's ID, idea, explanation. Most of the others are easy to read. So you have this in your hand. I'm going to walk through this with you. Okay. So when we stop it, when we look at this passage, in here, this is real busy. But if you see, I started with the small things and connected them first. So the top two verses are connected in their own little pod. For you are called to freedom, brothers. Now, I use this word only. It's not in your text. I pulled it out. It's not in your little cheat sheet. You can add it if you want. I pulled it out because Paul uses it. He uses the word only, and he uses the word now, kind of like a reset button. Or, in my opinion, a lot of times like an idea explanation. So that's something that I've added on my own as I study. Feel free to do your own. You know, if you see something that's like, you know, this really should be added to my list of crucial words, feel free. It doesn't change the meaning, but I think he says you were called to freedom, and then it sounds like an alternative. You can be free, or, you know, the alternative is using your freedom as an opportunity for the flesh. So do this, don't do that. Or do this, make sure you don't do that. Could be positive, negative, could be nothing. But that's the way I've thought to connect them. Our keyword, though, but, so you have freedom. Don't use it as an opportunity for the flesh. Don't do that. Do this. Through love, serve one another. Again, if we were stopping and studying deeply, we would probably look at all those words. Through, that is actually one of our conjunctions, I think. Yeah, it is. But we're not going to stop on it right now. So you could get kind of in the weeds with this. We're not going to do that. But through love, serve one another. And I think that's an alternative. And then the word for grounds all of those statements together. Why should we do those things? Why should we not use our freedom as an opportunity for the flesh and instead serve one another? Paul says, I'll tell you why. You out there who are so into the law, you want to hear what the law says? For the law is fulfilled in one word, love your neighbor as yourself. So Paul grounds that first statement, grounding, in this idea of the law, because these folks are hung up on the law, right? And he said, I'll tell you about the law. This is what the law says. Love one another. Is what you're doing loving? No. You're giving opportunity for the flesh. Okay? So that's how those are connected there. Verse 15, if you bite and devour one another, I've added then, watch out that you're not consumed by one another. We've already walked through this. But I say walk by the Spirit, and you will not desire or gratify the desires of the flesh. If you notice in here, I did not select by as a keyword, which I think Becky called out here. So, you know, clearly, you know, I've missed something in here, even in my my study. So, y'all are already catching on. But anyway, that big section in here, I've separated out. I didn't do it up here, and I think that's okay. Remember, this is not inspired. If I was just studying these two verses, I would connect them like this. But since I'm looking at a bigger text, I think there's a better connection for it, if that makes sense. So I take the top one, biting and devouring one another, and I put that as an alternative for what's ahead, which is loving your neighbor as yourself. I put that as, we don't love, you know, the alternative to loving your neighbor as yourself is biting and devouring one another, right? Those are not the same. We can't do both at the same time. We have to do one or the other. And then I have taken the next one and made that an alternative as well to that. Not biting and devouring one another. The alternative to all of that is walking by the Spirit. And as you walk by the Spirit, you will not gratify the desires of the flesh. So all that's, in my opinion, that's the way that's connected. So verse 17. This is another grounding statement, but I think, if you'll see the way I've structured this, that basically everything from 17 down to 24 hangs together as a unit. I think that's one big idea that Paul has that grounds the first few statements together. That is the reason or purpose of the first few. For the desires of the flesh are against the Spirit, and the desires of the Spirit are against the flesh. For, again, these are opposed to one another. I've added this in here in order to. Again, you see I'm kind of cheating there, doing some stuff that's not written in your paper here, but I'm doing this as if I were doing it for myself, so I'm, you know, as I said, maybe adding a few extra things. And that's also to give you freedom, you know, to whatever helps you keep this, you know, the text together. So in order to keep you from doing the things you want to do. All right, so you can see I've kind of made the smaller connection. These things are opposed to one another for there's a reason. There's an action and there's a purpose to keep you from doing the things you want to do. Now, there's a lot of commentary on what that means, and there's a lot of different, actually, translations about that phrase, keeping you from doing what you want to do. The older translations, I don't have that down. Anybody have a King James out there? No? I forget. I need to bring a King James.
We can look it up.
Yeah, I'll do that, Suzanne. Look it up real quick for us. It's very different. Not very different, but it's whenever I find a significant difference from a familiar translation like the King James, I want to explain why it's different. That's Galatians 5:17. You got it here?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well that works. Yeah, okay. So it says, is this King James?
Yes.
Oh. It says, so that you do not do the things that you wish. So that you do not do. And in the ESV it says, so that, what does it say? To keep you from doing the things you want to do. Yeah, thank you, Pam.
So, that may not seem like a big difference, but to me it's different enough to tell you because one seems like very concrete, so that you don't do it. But the thrust of it in the Greek is kind of more soft. It's
it's more like a safeguard than a hard and fast rule. And you know that from your life. Sometimes you're going to do the things you don't want to do. And in this case, Paul is saying, there's some stuff you want to do because of the flesh inside of you. But there's the desires of the flesh that are opposed to the desires of the Spirit, and the desires of the Spirit are opposed to the flesh. And that's so that you don't always give in to the desires of the flesh. That's the idea, is what he's saying here. The desires of the Spirit are opposed to the desires of the flesh, so that you don't always just give in and do whatever you want. What if we live life that way? Every time I had the desire to do something, I just did it. I'd be in jail a long time ago, you know? Not that I, you know, think I'm that bad of a person, but surely there's times when I've wanted to speed or wanted to punch somebody or wanted to take something that wasn't mine. And, you know, the desires of the Spirit kind of help you with that. Don't they just say, that would be great if you had one of those, but that's not yours. You can't take that. I didn't listen one time. I was in the second grade. I stole a banana eraser top for a pencil. I stole it from the book fair. I've never forgotten that. I don't know. I don't even know how to make it right. I don't know who to make amends to. Probably the PTA at my elementary school. But anyway, so that's what Paul is saying there. And those obviously hang together in mind as one little unit. That's the purpose, the ground. We don't do those things for that reason, because we don't want to do the things, or we want to keep ourselves from doing the things sometimes we want to do, which is a opposite of the way the world thinks. Just a little side note here. We're getting into a little Bible study. It's okay not to do the thing you want to do, you know? It's okay. Sometimes it's the right thing. I'm preaching to the choir here, even though maybe we're not all singers, but you know what I'm saying. This is the message of the world. If it feels good, do it. Nike's slogan, just do it. Don't deny yourself. I do believe that the core tenet, now this is going to get real weird, we're getting around Halloween, the core tenet of the Book of Satan is do not deny yourself. That's the core tenet. If it feels good, do it. That's what the whole quote religion is based on, not denying yourself. And so Paul is clearly saying, we all recognize there's things we want to do sometimes that we shouldn't. The world doesn't recognize that. It tries to eat away the barriers and beat down our conscience until we're able to do something we know we shouldn't do without feeling guilty about it. That's the wrong way to go about it. Okay. The next little section here. But if you're led by the Spirit, then you're not under the law. Okay? If then, I think that's actually a ground there. If you're led by the Spirit, you're not under the law. Or maybe that's one of those times where we don't need to supply it then. But at any rate, I don't think it makes a big difference in the rest of the passage. Now, the next chunk here is really hard to say how it goes with anything else. It's almost like if you're reading an article and there's a graph. Right? That's kind of what it's like. It's just a list of things. Like if you're reading an article about cows, and there's like, okay, and here's cow breeds. And it starts listing, you know, there's Bramer, and there's, you know, Charolais, and there's, it's kind of like, it's not really a lot of grammar to connect. So we got two big sections, the works of the flesh, and then the fruit of the Spirit. I won't read through them again, but I will just make a little note here. Oh, man, I'm running out of time here. That's okay. I'll get as far as I can. The first one in the works of the flesh, note here, I will say sexual immorality, sensuality, idolatry, sorcery. Okay, right there, you can kind of put a dot or a comma. And then enmity, strife, jealousy, fits of anger, rivalries, dissensions, divisions, envy. You can put a dot there. I think Paul is talking to them about their sins. I think Paul is getting personal here. And let me tell you why. Not necessarily the things they're doing now, but the Roman world was and is famous for the sins of sexual immorality, impurity, sensuality, idolatry, sorcery, drunkenness, and orgies. That's the culture around them. So those are the works of the flesh from the outside, from the culture around you. I think he's saying these things on the inside, enmity, strife, jealousy, anger, rivalry, dissensions, divisions, envy. I think those are things happening in the church. So we've got these two kind of columns of, even here, two columns of works of the flesh. There are things that are culturally driven, the Roman culture, and in our day, American culture. And there's kind of church sins. Now, you can be jealous anywhere, but I think that's the idea. These are interpersonal sins, right? These are sins that happen because you have a relationship with somebody or you have a connection to somebody. So these are the two kind of columns of works of the flesh. And then he says, but the fruit of the Spirit, against such things there is no law. Again, going all the way back up to verse 14, you want to fulfill the whole law, love your neighbor as yourself. And down in verse down in verse 22, he lays out this, like, really, I mean, it's, what else would you call this but a definition of love, or maybe a description of love? Again, these are things you can't do by yourself. You can't show gentleness to yourself or be patient. I mean, I guess you can be patient with yourself, but these are things to be practiced in community with another person. These are ways that we show love. And Paul is kind of drawing back in that idea of the law, right? The law can be fulfilled in this one word. And we go all the way down to verse 24, and he says, you want to know what you can do that's not against the law? I'll tell you. You can be loving. You can have joy. I guess joy you can have without another person. Peace. You can be patient. You can be kind. You can be good. You can be faithful, gentle. You can exercise self-control. There's no law against that. There's no law against it. You want to practice the law? Do these things. And those who practice, or those who belong to Christ Jesus, have been crucified with its flesh and its desires and passions. So, verse 24, I think, is a progression from the fruit of the Spirit, that big section of the fruit of the Spirit, the negative and the positive fruits, and then the progression from showing fruit to crucifying the flesh. So what you do when Christ gets a hold of you, you exchange flesh for fruit. See the big transition there, the big progression? We exchange our flesh for fruit. So that's how that grounds that idea. And this whole section, I think, grounds the top section, where Paul is ultimately ending up with, if you walk by the Spirit, you won't gratify the desires of the flesh. And that's grounded by this idea of what it means to be in the Spirit and not the flesh, with an exclamation point of, when you're crucified with Christ, we do this great exchange, flesh for fruit. Okay? And the last thing I'll throw at you is a little bit of a wrench, the big one out to the side, which says bilateral. So that's me kind of being cute, but I think it's actually the case that we do have, this whole passage is giving color to the one before it and the one after it. So if you read the one before and you come to this, it's kind of like, oh, that's what that's talking about. And if you read the one after it, you're like, okay, I see where he's going. So that's why I think this big chunk, verse 13 to verse 24, is actually not just connected to one proposition, but to two. That's really rare. At least it's rare for me. I don't normally do that. I only did it here because I didn't have a better way, and I thought, okay, well, it must be this. It feels like it's connected to both. So it can be both. And as always, the way it's connected is verse 13, the very top of whatever your big box is. So all of these are connected together, but the top one right here determines how that whole section goes to the next one. So for, which is our word, our key word for a ground, like a reason, or almost like an explanation. But so in the grounding of that, kind of lands us on verse 25. If we live by the Spirit, then let us also keep in step with the Spirit. I said I wasn't going to go over it. If you have a minute, yeah, I will, if that's okay. If we live by the Spirit, let us also keep in step with the Spirit. All of this stuff is telling you to live by the Spirit. There's the bad flesh, the good fruit, all of this stuff. And then Paul is saying, for that reason, for all of these reasons, for this whole thing, if you live by the Spirit, you got to keep in step with the Spirit. And I'm going to tell you a story. When I was in, I don't remember what grade, probably high school, maybe 9th grade or something, 10th grade, we had a thing called field day at school. Maybe y'all had those. My kids have them. Where you just go outside, and it's kind of like the Olympics at school. Might have even been in grade school. I don't remember. And so we did all kinds of things. Long jump, 100-yard dash, who could do the most sit-ups, who could run the mile the fastest, all these things. My favorite one, the one I was ace at, was a three-legged race. And you say, well, Brother Woody, how in the world can you be greatest at a three-legged race? And that's a good question. I can't. You have to have a partner, right? That's the whole point. And it was me and my best friend at the time. We lived down the road from one another. We did everything together. And we entered the three-legged race, and we smoked everybody. I'm going to go ahead and confess something. You may not know this by looking at me. I'm not fast, okay? I'm not fast. I wasn't anywhere near the fastest kid in my grade, not even close. So how did I beat all of those kids to the finish line? I didn't. Me and David did, because we were running in step. We went home and we practiced. We put a little band around our legs and we said, we gave ourselves a command. Okay, when we start, we're going to start on the middle leg. Doesn't matter which one is together. If it's the left or right, you know, let us tie one together. Whichever one is together, we start on the middle leg and we count it. One, two, until we get a rhythm going, and then we start running. And we practiced that at home and practiced it. And we got to the day, the field day, and we started off and they, you know, shot the little gun, or probably did air horn or something. And we took off, and right out of the gate, half the people fell down. So we're already winning. You know, and there's a couple kids, super fast kids, tied together, and they're fighting each other. You know, and then there's David and I just loping along. One, two, one, two, one, two, one, two. And before you know it, we're striding down there. Now let me tell you, David is a much better athlete than me. He was 4 inches taller than me. He had longer legs, a longer stride. He was faster than me. And the only way that we stayed together and the only way we won, we finished the race, was that we stayed in step with one another. I didn't fight against him. He didn't fight against me. I didn't try to outrun him. He didn't try to outrun me. And this is, Paul is saying, this all this comes down to that. All this talk about the Spirit and everything, it doesn't do you any good unless you walk in step with the Spirit. And that's not laws. That's not keeping laws. Walking is the Hebrew, or in this case, it's funny, I thought it was live by step with the Spirit. That is what I was going to say. Walking in step with the Spirit is the Hebrew way of saying, this is how you live life. The daily rhythm of life has to be in step with the Spirit. When you get up, when you lie down, when you walk by the way, when you sit in your house, whatever we're doing it in rhythm with the Spirit. This is how we walk by the Spirit. This is how we live by the Spirit. So all of that kind of feeds that one idea, gives it depth of meaning. And so this is how I use this idea of tracing. You can see how this like stay perfectly to it. But it gives me structure to help me hone in on the big argument, the main point, and where Paul is going with what he's saying. And hopefully it'll be helpful to you as you study and read the Word. And you don't have to do all of this. I mean, really, you don't have, if you just see like, but you can say, oh, okay, I remember talking about that. I see a therefore, or if I see a by, or one of those words. So it doesn't have to be anything complicated, but maybe it'll help you kind of, as you're reading, stop, put the brakes on a little bit, dig in, you know, before you move on. Let me pray for us. Hopefully you've maybe got a little bit of a more of a tool in your tool bag. If not, and you want to, I'll explain a little bit later on whenever we can get together, and I would be glad to get together with you. Or maybe if you want to say, let's do it again next week. Maybe not, but anyway, I'm just saying I'm available for that. Let me pray for us. I'm late to a budget meeting. Lord, I thank you for this word, and even though I feel like I've made it pretty complicated, Lord, we see it's such a simple thing Paul is telling us, such a simple thing you are telling us through the Apostle Paul. We've got to walk in step with the Spirit, and the things the Spirit has us doing and the things that are in step with the Spirit, there's no law against any of that stuff. We're going to be abiding by the law, and we're going to be living in the Spirit. I pray that we take that to heart, and we do that, we remember that, Lord. And maybe it helps us, even tomorrow, as we go about our day, living our normal day, trying to do it in lockstep with the Spirit. Pray you watch over us, keep us safe, Lord. Bring us back to your house next time together. We pray in Jesus' name.